someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
As a professor of urban economics for nearly four decades, he has grappled with some of the nation's most critical questions. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Chair of the Department of Economics and co-founder and executive director of the Howard University Center for Urban Progress, Dr. Rodney Green. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, let's start with the very beginning. Tell me where you grew up and what was your family life like?
Well, we had a very nice family, I would say. We grew up in Falls Church, Virginia, and I attended actually Jeb Stuart High School. And I'm pleased to say that we're in the midst of a big fight to change the name of that to Thurgood Marshall High School, for obvious reasons. The Confederacy will not rise again. But I enjoyed high school very much and then went on to college. And in college was really where I had my sort of political awakening, because growing up in Falls Church is a relatively conservative, middle-class area. And as a result, I didn't really have a clear understanding of what the world was really like. But in 1968, I had the opportunity to go to France. And as you know, 1968 was a very big year. There was a huge strike of workers and students throughout France. And I was sort of surprised to see that kind of activity. I was going to a school program there and just got a whole lot of new ideas from that. I then decided I would hitchhike up to Sweden, where I had family. And as I was hitchhiking along the Riviera on my way to get through the rest of Europe, I got picked up by three young men from Tunisia living in southern France. And they asked me, they said, "Well, so Rod, what do you think about this war in Vietnam that's going on right now?" And I told them, "Well, I wasn't really sure, you know. I said, it just seemed strange that we were involved there, but didn't we have to stop communism somewhere?" The car came to a screeching halt. We both got out, all of us, and they decided it's time for lunch. And so they proceeded to school me, you might say, for the next 2 hours about the whole question about imperialism and all of that. And I then was just very shaken up again. But I think that what really happened when I came back to the United States after this experience, I decided I had to do something to intervene in the world affairs and not just be my own person sort of getting along in the world. And so I joined a group called the Students for a Democratic Society. And the project I got involved in was working with welfare mothers in New Haven, Connecticut. They had a group called Mothers on the March, and it was a very militant group. And there were about four women there who really consolidated my knowledge about what the real world was, because before that I was somewhat isolated, and these women taught me an awful lot, and so I consider them my real initial tutors.
Okay. Now, obviously, as you said, it was a time when there were lots of things going on, lots of burning platforms, as it were, and you were finding your way through that. What did your education at Yale provide as a backdrop to your trying to immerse yourself in world affairs?
Well, we had some faculty members who were really remarkable. Not so much the old traditional ones, who also were remarkable in their own way, but some of the young faculty members who themselves were engaged a little bit in the civil rights struggle and the discussions around the Vietnam War and so on. And they helped us through readings and discussions to get a better understanding of the actual analysis of how it works. It's not enough to just have an emotional response. You really need to have an analytical approach to understanding the world if you hope to change it in some small or large way. And so that was really the benefit of that education. I was part of a group for my last 2 years there. It was a special major in politics and economics. We had 11 11 students and 7 faculty members. And the debates among the faculty members in that group, we met once a week for 3 hours, were amazing. So it was that kind of experience that really helped a lot.
Right. And then you left there and joined the Army.
Well, I was drafted and did 2 years and was actually part of the movement, the GI movement against the war. We had a lot of activities where we were trying to encourage soldiers to resist various forms of racism, especially in the military, and also oppose the war in Vietnam from within. It was quite an interesting period of time, I must say.
Right. And then subsequent to that, you decided to further your education. What was the motivation behind that, and what influenced your choice?
Well, I was interested in, having been through the anti-Vietnam War movement and been involved in the anti-racist movement of the 1960s and so on, I wanted to continue to get a better understanding. So I decided I would go to a program that at the American University where they had a number of choices for how you would study economics. One was called the political economy track, which took a look more, its foundation was basically Marxism and the sort of unity of economic and political developments. And the other track was the more traditional one. And so I chose the political economy track and learned a great deal about that way of understanding the world, which has helped continue to shape my way of thinking.
Now, as you think of DC at that time, I would assume that you got to American University after the riots in D.C.
That's correct.
What did you think about the city at that time?
I thought that the rebellions that had happened in the 60s really laid bare the inequities that existed in the city. At American University, of course, that's over on the far northwest, and it's rather quiet and calm and well-to-do. But the rest of the city was not. And so I was engaged in a number of other activities to try to bring some of the students that I worked with at American University into relationship with some of the more working-class sectors of the city, especially east of the river, because that's, of course, where the greatest distress was and still is today.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Rodney Green, who has been chair of the Department of Economics and co-founder and executive director of the Howard University Center for Urban Progress. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. To change gears a bit, so you went on to obviously continue to immerse yourself in areas that were looking at those disparities, especially in the urban areas. What was the motivation behind the formation of the Center for Urban Progress?
Well, the Center for Urban Progress, which is a real gem in my opinion, to me it represented an effort to overcome the tendency towards ivory towerness, or in our case, ebony towerness, because even though many people did research that was potentially very progressive in its impact, there was no direct connection between the faculty and the community. So I thought that this would be an opportunity, which was facilitated by the Mordecai Wyatt Johnson grant within the university, to begin a process of engaging faculty and staff with the surrounding communities around community-based participatory research, around community development projects, and the like. And so we began with our earliest project was it's kind of an amusing title, the Georgia Avenue Community Renaissance Initiative, which we called GACRI, which is like a drink, right? Anyway, but this brought together 3 community development corporations, the Office of Planning and the district government, and some other folks, as well as some folks there. And I have to say, Maybelle Taylor Bennett was the person who allowed me to come into this group, because she was the one who knew all these folks, because she was a community person for the university. And at first, I have to say, they were a little skeptical, like, who is this boy? And, attended the meetings and made a contribution. And then I said, look, we talk a lot, but we haven't done much. Why don't we try to get some money to try to do some of these projects that we all would like to see, whether it's affordable housing or small business development or whatever the particular issue might be. So they said, okay, well, that sounds good. Why don't you go ahead and do it? So I said, okay. So we put together some proposals to the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development. And you know, they sort of looked askance at me. They said, because, you know, in the history of university-community relations, often grant activities turn out to benefit the university, mm-hmm. and the community is left behind. So none of them really trusted me, I don't blame them. And then finally, the money came in. We were successful in our grant application. And they still said, oh, well, that's nice, Rod. Okay, so good. So let us know what's next. So then what happened next was, they actually got the contracts from Howard, and they actually got the money that had been promised, which they were shocked by because historically, as I say, that doesn't happen too often. And so after that, things went very smoothly, and we were able to continue to get funding from HUD and did all kinds of projects, 45 new affordable housing units we were able to facilitate, workforce development programming, youth programming, and so on. So we were very pleased that we were able to cement that relationship with these community residents.
Now, obviously, there's been a lot of gentrification over the course of time that you've been here with the Center for Urban Progress. What is your viewpoint about the surrounding community today compared to that? Because in as much as progress has been made with affordable housing, et cetera, it also seems that there's significant engagement and involvement of really massive developers who I'm not sure that they share the same sentiment.
Well, that is a problem. Where my office is used to be a set of row houses and small businesses and is now huge condos and various other things. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a serious problem of displacement that has emerged. I live in Prince George's County, and I know that a lot of former residents of Shaw are now living in Prince George's County because they cannot afford the higher rents that are being charged or even the increase in the property taxes if they owned their mm-hmm. place. And in a way, the developers in some ways have overwhelmed the affordable housing developments that we're trying to make. Now, there is $100 million coming in the Housing Production Trust Fund in the district, which would create a certain number of housing units. But the reality is that there's 50,000 people on the waiting list for public housing alone. Mm-hmm. And so the need is far greater than that $100 million. And the developers, of course, are not responding to that. They're driven by the highest best use, as they call it, which means the most profitable kind of investment. And as a result, we face some serious problems undermining some of the work that we actually did many years ago.
Now, when you look across the country in general, and especially with the election cycle that we're in, and the discussion around income inequality and the growing gaps, again, what's your perspective of A, what is the gravity of the problem, and then B, what are some potential solutions?
Well, the income inequality has definitely grown. Recently, there was an article in the Washington Post that talked about the housing challenge for African-American families in DeKalb County, where even though there's been a recovery among the white population in terms of housing values, black housing values are still in the doldrums, 25% below where they were before the crash. And there's a whole system of racism in various ways that creates a cascade effect, generating even more inequality. Every time there's one more step, it seems like there's a negative cascade. Mm-hmm. That's a serious problem. Now, we have in our department, we have a Center on Race and Wealth that is funded by the Ford Foundation, and we've been trying to work on that problem, at least at a research level, and to support efforts of state coalitions that are trying to reverse the wealth gap that exists, the racial wealth gap. I'm not real optimistic about solving that problem in practice. It's really one of those long-term challenges that we face in this country, and I think that doing certain policies to overcome the wealth gap, jobs policies, children's savings accounts, the whole range of policies that have been proposed, I don't know if they would really touch this fundamental racial divide. So I'm afraid that we're in for a much longer time where the inequality will continue to grow, and that it will create various kinds of social disruption, which itself might be the trigger that leads to a serious policy of redistribution.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Rodney Green, who has been chair of the Department of Economics and co-founder and executive director of the Howard University Center for Urban Progress. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.
This is Harold Fisher. The Daily Drum is more than news, sports, and weather. It's information, conversation, edification. I talk to the newsmakers and other great guests that make you think. You're not just listening. You are part of the process with your phone calls. You can find me on Facebook/Harold T. Fisher or follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR. Join me, Harold Fisher, from 7 to 7:30 p.m. for the Daily Drum on 96.3 WHUR, the Adult Mix.